bite. I should just think of Krishna. And Krishna says, because you're fighting is devotional service, and it is of a superior nature, so therefore you should do this. And here Krishna mentions Mayi three times. So that means Shamasundar with yellow cloth, flute, and Vaijayanti garland. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So he's saying that you should fix your intelligence and mind on me, not on your own soul. Thus you will live with me. Not like the Mishra Bhaktas who only gradually come to me after experiencing higher realms, beginning with Swarga. And they only see my Aishvarya feature anyway, of Vishnu. So that's Baladeva Vibhushan, who was mentioning about this meditating on your own soul. So he says, fix your intelligence on me, not on your own soul now. Thus you will live with me, not like Mishra Bhaktas, who only go to Vishnu after going to Svarga and so many other places in the higher realms. So the word eva indicates that the worship of the Nirvishesh Swarup is prohibited. That certainly you should fix your mind on me, Arjuna. Not on the Nirvishesh Brahma. On me, on me, on me. Three times. So that is the conclusion of the previous section. And look, Krishna is talking about a lofty stage of bhakti. That's okay. That's all right. You can turn it up if you want. Because someone whose mind's always thinking on Krishna, whose mind is attached to Krishna, he has to at least be on the level of asakti. So this verse is describing Raganuga Bhakti. He has to come on that level where he's already attached to Krishna in certain mood or relationship. Otherwise, it's not possible for the mind to always think of Krishna. Because we understand that asakti, the mind is never deviates from Krishna. And Prabhupada makes this more clear in the following commentaries. Yeah. He doesn't say very much in this commentary here. So, then the next verse, the Lord calls Arjuna Dhananjaya. And the idea is that hearing about that the mind it has to be completely fixed, Arjuna says, over this is not possible. Just as he'll say that a few times, because these first few verses are describing when the devotee is working in bhakti with the antakarana, mainly with the mind. The mind is fixed. So Arjuna is already admitted in chapter 6, Chanchalam hi mana Krishna, right? Pramati balavadridam, the mind is always agitated and difficult to control. It's always flickering. So the same principle is being applied here. So the Lord in text 9 will call him Dhananjaya, meaning that you've conquered many enemies and you've won much wealth. So to capture the wealth of meditation, you should also conquer your mind. And actually, you're quite able to do so. So let us read text 9. Atachittam samadhatum na shaknoshi maistiram abhyasa yogena tato mam ichaptum dhananjaya. My dear Arjuna, O winner of wealth, if you cannot fix your mind upon me without deviation, as described in the previous verse, then follow the regulative principles of bhakti yoga. In this way, develop a desire to attain me. So Prabhupada uses this often quoted phrase, regulative principles of bhakti yoga. So there, you'll notice in many of his books, he's referring to Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. And Krishna calls this Abhyas Yoga, Abhyas Bhakti Yoga. So Abhyas simply means practice. And so this is Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti level. So this means, this Abhyas Yoga means trying to fix the mind on Krishna by gradually withdrawing the mind from the sense objects. So here there's kind of a push and pull, like a tug of war inside, you know. The devotee is constantly trying to pull his mind away from the sense objects. That's called Abhyas Yoga, to practice fixing the mind on Krishna. And when it goes away, you bring it back, fix it again. And then when it flies away, bring it back again. Now Prabhupada begins, he gets now into the philosophy. He says, in this verse, two different processes of bhakti are indicated. The first applies to one who has actually developed an attachment for Krishna. Now, if you study a lot of his writings, Prabhupada uses this word when he's describing asakti, when he's describing the Shraddha to Prema levels. He always uses taste for ruchi, attachment for asakti, steadiness for nishta, like the certain English words that he uses. So the first applies, which was the previous, that if you cannot do this, atat chittam samadaptum na shaknosi, if you cannot do this first one, your mind is attached to me, then there's this other one. And the other one is for one who has not developed an attachment for the Lord by transcendental love. For this second class, there are different prescribed rules and regulations one can follow to be ultimately elevated to the stage of attachment to Krishna. So that's very clear. And the commentators write, as Krishna, if you can't do it naturally, then practice controlling it and fixing it on me. When your mind becomes accustomed to thinking of me, then it will be very easy to attain me. So then in the last paragraph, Prabhupada writes, to practice the regulative principles of bhakti yoga, one should, under the guidance of an expert guru, follow certain principles. One should rise early in the morning, take bath, enter the temple, offer prayers, chant Hare Krishna, collect flowers for the deity, cook foodstuffs, take prasadam, and so on. There are various rules and regulations which one should follow. So he says like three times here, rules and regulations, prescribed rules and regulations. That's definitely Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. And one should constantly hear the Gita and Bhagavatam from pure devotees. This practice can help one rise to the level of love of God, and then he is sure of his progress into the spiritual kingdom of God. This practice of Bhakti Yoga under the rules and regulations, with the direction of a spiritual master, will surely bring one to the stage of love of God. The main principle of Vaidhi Sadhana is smartavya satatam Vishnu vismartavya na jatuchi sarva vidhi nishedasyo etayo eva kinkura. So all of the various rules and regulations are meant for helping one to remember the Lord. So the first stage is when the mind is easily fixed in attachment to Krishna. And the second level, Vaidhi Sadhana, is when one is still struggling with the mind. But they're both talking about inside, the antakarana. Antakarana means the internal senses. Mainly it means the mind. So another translation of a commentary was that the mind is like a river flowing to filthy areas, but control it with a dam and bring it to the ocean of my form and swim in this ocean of rasa. You are Dhananjaya, and you have conquered many enemies and won much wealth. Now fight with the enemy of your mind and attain the wealth of meditation. More poetic way of saying the same thing. Actually, it was Baladeva Vidyabhushan who mentioned that that if one mind doesn't flow like the Ganges to the ocean, as in the first verse, then what to do? Basically, that was he mentioned the Ganges River flowing into the ocean. So then the next verse describes engaging the external senses, and it is the next step down. In other words, one should do 8. If one can't do that, then he should do number 9, Vairisadhana. And if he can't do Vairisadhana very well, then he should do number 10. And that's basically working for Krishna. Abhyase pyasamartosi mat karma paramo bhava mat artam apikarmani kurvam siddhim avapsyasi. If you cannot practice the regulations of bhakti yoga, Arjuna, then just try to work for me, because by working for me you will come to the perfect stage. So, one can still be drawn to the perfectional stage by working for the Lord. How to do this has been already explained in the 55th verse of the last chapter, Prabhupada writes. And he describes that one should be sympathetic to the preaching of Krishna consciousness. There are many devotees engaged in preaching and they require help. He uses the word propagation, means preaching. So, even if one cannot directly practice the regular principle of bhakti, he can try to help such work. Every endeavor requires land, capital, organization, and labor, just as in a business. The only difference is that in materialism, one works for sense gratification. The same work, however, can be performed for the satisfaction of Krishna, and that is spiritual activity. So, this is still talking about bhakti, but it's kind of like Bhagavan Seva, you know, working service for the Lord. More active, the external senses must be more active. Therefore, Prabhupada said, work now, samadhi later. So we kind of, you might think that, well, where do we fit in? Well, we're doing Vairisadhana, and we're trying to attain the first stage. But we also do a lot of the things mentioned in this verse. And actually most of us, especially in the beginning, or even in the middle, you know, of our practice, we're doing a lot of these things. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments, Krishna, that Arjuna says, my mind flickers like the wind, and I don't have the strength to control it. What should I do? Krishna says, if you cannot do Abhyas Yoga, and your mind is influenced by avidya, then you should work for me. Such as hearing and chanting my glories, offering prayers, worshipping me, cleaning my temple, watering tulsi, collecting flowers, and various other services. By performing such blessed activities for my pleasure, madartam apikarmani, you will become my loving associate, even without smaranam of me. So, when somebody is influenced more by the lower modes, then he needs to be more active with his external senses. So Prabhupada engaged us in such kind of activities, collecting money, distributing books, going out on Harinam, jumping up and down on the street, distributing prasadam, making life members, going to different offices or factories. And your body is engaged 24 hours a day. And then, of course, in the temple also, you're cleaning the temple, washing dishes, cooking, purchasing, and doing puja, and doing all the deity seva. Your body is completely engaged in this activity. So that's working for Krishna. And it's bhakti yoga. And he says that if one does this, then he'll come gradually to the perfect stage. Korvim siddhim avapsisi. You will, by doing this, you will attain perfection. Now, Prabhupada, so this is kind of, you could say it's bhakti yoga at the level of karma. Because there's a lot of external senses are being engaged. And because there are some modes, and then one needs to kind of rise above that, therefore he's working, doing a lot of physical work. So you could say that's like bhakti pitched at the level of karma. It's not karma yoga, but it's like pitched at that level. So here, now Prabhupada describes nishkam and sakam karma in the end of his commentary. Nishkam bhakti and sakam bhakti. Or you could say nishkam bhagavan seva and sakam bhagavan seva. Alright. He says, if one has sufficient money, he can help in building an office or temple for propagating Krishna consciousness. I mean, as we mentioned the other day, even Rupa Goswami, he built a temple. Right? It's not like something lower in one sense. Of course, he wouldn't have been able to do it without the wealthy Maharaj. Who built Govinda? Huh? How do you pronounce his word? Name? Mansingh, right. Maharaj Mansingh. So, I mean, Rupa Goswami, you know, he wouldn't be able to do that on his own. So Mansingh did this seva, this Bhagavan seva, right? And probably Mansingh was not able to just sit and chant all day. Probably. So if he can help with publications, or he can help with publications, there are various fields and one should be interested in these activities. Now I describe the sakam level. If one cannot sacrifice the result of his activities, that same person can still sacrifice some percentage to propagate Krishna consciousness. This voluntary service to the cause of Krishna consciousness will help one rise to a higher state of love of God, whereupon one becomes perfect. Some water? So, in other words, one is trying to think of Krishna. He wants to come to the higher levels. He accepts Krishna as the goal of his life. Mad karma krin mad paramo. Mad bhakta. He's Krishna devotee. He avoids the, atheists and those opposed to bhakti. And he tries to be friendly to everyone. He's following that principle, 1155. But he's not just quite advanced enough to struggle with the mind and do sadhana, vaidhi sadhana. It's Bhagavad Arpita, but it's more than that, because he's like engaging more, not just this kind of official rituals given in the Vedas as a karma yogi would. You know, he's more involved. He's
understanding also is better than
and plus he has the understanding of Gita and Bhagavatam. He's like heading towards Krishna, just that he's not so advanced. And that is basically all of us, you know. Especially when we first begin. No. Well, according to the commentary of Vishnu Chakravarti, he describes the first two, the internal senses. Because he's doing Abhyas Yoga, but they define Abhyas Yoga as gradually learning to control the mind from the sense objects. So it's still up here. Of course, we know that in Vaidisana, the devotee is also, it's not just sitting down, you know. But, I mean, in the, even Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, if you're not chanting 64 rounds, you're fallen. And it was only Prabhupada who brought it down first to 32. And then the devotee said, no, we can't do that. And then to 16. So usually Vaidisadana means 64 rounds a day. And here, you know, reading the Bhagavatam for many hours. And it's not much time for, you know, so much other activities. As you know, I don't know if you've tried to chant 64 rounds, but if you do that, there's not much more time for other things. Right? Huh? I can't hear you. Yeah, there's not much time for preaching. I mean, I guess you can, if you woke up at 2 o'clock and then, you know, you didn't have to go to the morning program, you could probably finish 64 rounds by, you know, like 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock, something like that. You know, but anyway, that's not our process because Prabhupada saw that, you know, we don't have so much ability to concentrate the mind. So it seems that he pitched ISKCON at something in between verse 9 and 10. That there's a lot of work, and then there's some time when you're doing this Vaidhi Sadhana Abhyas Yoga, you know, for a few hours in the morning. Because that's the problem, is that we're not able to fix the mind on Krishna for more than a couple hours, really, in when doing Nam, chanting the holy name. Most people. Mm-hmm. Okay, maybe on Ekadashi we can try to do that. But we can see that it's not so easy for 8 hours just chanting japa. Right? So, I mean, that's my answer to this question, right? Because if you think that Vaidisadana, well, yeah, it's also a lot of physical activity, but not, I mean, that's only because we have our ISKCON idea of what Vaidisadana is, which is kind of pitched in between these two. Vaidisadana usually means you're just chanting most, at least half of the day. Huh? You're answering the question? We're not discriminating. Krishna's discriminating. Yeah, but you hear, what are the physical things? Hear and chant, pray, worship, clean the temple. That's what we're doing. Bordering Tulsi, collecting flowers, making garlands, doing puja, and all of these things. And, you know, I mean, we try to think of Krishna when we're doing those things, but he says that you can, just by doing them, because they're directly related to me, even if you forget about me without smaranam, then still you attain perfection. Because gradually the mind will be drawn to Krishna by doing these activities. Because it's mad artam apikarmani. It's for the pleasure of Krishna. It's Krishna ke liye, as you say. It's the chartorti form, right? Bhagavan ke liye. It's for God. Mad artam, for my sake, you do it. So it's, then it's a, there's a very clear conception of who that person is, and then there's this idea of developing a loving relationship with him, and you're guided by the pure devotee, spiritual master, Prabhupada mentions twice in the commentary, and you're studying Gita and Bhagavatam. That means you're a devotee. You're not just a nishkam karma yogi. See, the person is judged by his goal more than his activities. That's the real, when you get down to the finer distinguishing characteristics, then that's when you can pinpoint it. What is this goal? The karma yogi, his goal is not prema, seva to Bhagavan. Just kind of self-purification, free from the modes, getting free from sin, doing duty. Like that. Different motive. So, do you want to hear the next verse? Murari? No? Go ahead. Which purport? Mad Artam?
Nine.
Okay.
Abhyas Yoga. Abhyas Yoga. That once you rise early, take bath, collect flowers, offer to deities, cook foodstuffs, offer to deities. So these are like activities.
Mm-hmm.
All these things. And here in the text 10, he's telling that if you have some, it's just a businessman requires some capital place, all these things. It seems more like.
Yeah, that's probably because Prabhupada, as I said, he's kind of pitched ISKCON in between this kind of level. And this, because this is being said that it's Vaidisadhana Bhakti, then he's kind of adding the ones from 10 into the commentary on 9. At least if you compare, or if you compare them with all the other Charya's comments, then you can see. And if you see ISKCON and you know the history, you know what I mean? Then that's where I'm saying this. It's like a blend. But because they're both bhakti, then there's no contradiction. They're both on the absolute level. And they, it's just that one like is considered a pitch higher. Right. That famous story I told, I'm going to tell that tonight in the japa work. Go ahead. And 8 is higher than 9, too. There are equal because they all kurvim siddhim avapsisi. They help you to come to the level where you can, you know, you can conquer the mind. And when you do that, that means then you can do number 8. And then the mind's always thinking of Krishna at ruchi and asakti. So it's just, I mean, just like, you know, bhajana kriya is not much different from nishta, right? They're both on, you know, one is stage 3 and the other stage 5 of prema bhakti, to prema bhakti. But that's kind of what Krishna's talking about. Asakti, you know, maybe nishta, you know, maybe kanishta level, you know, bhajana kriya, like something like this. He's talking about different levels of bhakti. They're all absolute.
The activities in verse 9 are considered to be higher than those in verse 10 because they need a higher level of purity to perform?
They also, yeah, of course the result will be higher. Once you finish asakti, you'll come to bhava. And that's higher. And when you finish nishta bhakti, you'll come to ruchi. And when you finish anishtita bhajana kriya, then you come to nishtita bhajana kriya. So they all attain certain levels of adhikar, or purification, which has to do with the modes of nature also. Right? And And then, of course, they will lead one to the next stage. It's all spiritual. Prabhupada said these are all spiritual activities. Okay, you want to hear the next verse? That's your commentary, Gaurasundara Maharaj. Well, you could see it like that, I guess. You could say primarily. But then again, a lot of brahmacharis end up getting married. So then they're going down or not going? Anyway, that's another question. 9 is advanced stage of Vairisana Bhakti, and 10 is initial stage. Yeah, you could say that. There weren't any exact terminology given for text 10, just like working service for the Lord. Karma for the sake of Bhagavan. But it's considered bhakti. And Prabhupada says also, in 10, he's talking about the previous verse. Because even the next verse, which is clearly Nishkam Karma Yoga, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that if you're unable to do this karma seva for Bhagavan, right, then you should take shelter of bhakti yoga and renounce the fruits of all your actions, as spoken about in the first 6 chapters. So it's still like with the aim of getting into bhakti yoga. See, so the goal is very clearly defined, even in 11. And what to speak of 10? When the person's building a temple for Krishna, then, you know, and you can't just say it's karma yoga. Because it's directly for Krishna. It's for Krishna's house, where he's going to live. Right? But when Prabhupada says regular principles, he's not talking about the 4 negative nishedas. He's talking about the 64 angas of bhakti most of the time, unless it's like a letter. It says, and if he specifically says 4 regular, but if he just mentions in the shastras 4 regular principles, he's talking about these angas, bhakti angas. Okay. Now, next verse. Atayita rapya shaktu si kortum mad yogam ashritaha sarva karma falatyagam tatakuru yatatmavan. If, however, you are unable to work in this conscious me, then try to act, giving up the results of your work, and try to be self situated. Now, Prabhupada kind of left out the kortum mad yogam ashrita, which is like, so then you should take shelter of my bhakti yoga, which means taking shelter of Krishna, because Krishna's bhakti yoga is non-different from Krishna. So even in 11, you have a nishkam karma, which is described in the first 6 chapters of the Gita, but it's still with the aim of going to Krishna, taking shelter of Krishna's bhakti yoga. But there is a difference here, because this is a kind of indirect. Now it's becoming indirect, because there's no results mentioned in the shloka as in the previous 3 shlokas. There's no results saying that if you do this, then you will, you know, attain perfection or come to me or develop a desire to attain me. It doesn't say anything like that. So now, kind of went far enough over the line. So Vishnu Chakravarti says, if you're unable to do this, Bhagavan Seva, working for the Lord, then take shelter of my bhakti yoga, my yogam ashritaha, and renounce the fruits of all your actions, karmapala, tyag, by offering them to me, as given in chapters 1 to 6. So then he describes that there's the first six chapters describe mainly Nishkam Karma Yoga, and the middle six chapters describe Bhakti Yoga. And Bhakti Yoga is divided into two types. One, when a person is acting with his internal senses. And second, when he's acting with his external senses, primarily. And he says the first one, when he's acting with the internal senses, is also divided into sections, three kinds. And I'll write it. Into three sections. First one, it's called Smarnam. Second is called Manana. And the third is called Abhyas. So this is the more advanced level. Manana, they're both meditating on the Lord, but Smarnam is when it's easier. And Bhyas is when the person is trying to do, you know, he's practicing to do those other two. So one, two, three. Now he says that these three are difficult for those who are less intelligent. And so only those who have proper intelligence and are like free from offenses, they can do this three, dealing with the internal senses. This deals with leelas, this deals with mantras, mainly. And this is imperfect stage. And we describe what the external senses means. Hearing, chanting, remembering, there's some puja, offering prayers, building temples, watering tulsi, all of those things, collecting flowers, like that. So, so that's easy for everyone to do. For the common people, the second one is more simple, more easy. And if they can't do these two types, then they should perform Nishkam Karma Yoga as described in the first six chapters of the Gita.
Watering tulsi, collecting
flowers. Yeah, number 10. Yeah. Right, we already explained that he's kind of, he can do whatever he wants. He can mix them together. He's presenting us kind of a combination of sadhana. Because we're all common people. And we need something easy, especially Westerners. Right? But we need to do Vaidhi sadhana also. So it's like, starts at the 10, work for me, work now, and samadhi later, the different levels of samadhi. That's these three. You know, who knows? Maybe this is asakti, this is ruchi, and this is nishta. Something like this. You know? They didn't explain it in such a way, but you can see that there's characteristics like this. So, now Prabhupada's talking about Nishkam Karma Yoga. The person is not able to directly perform those things like building a temple and collecting flowers and watering the garden and all of these things and praying directly to Krishna. So then he should do some kind of philanthropic activities and give up the fruits of his result. this karma fall tyag. Because that helps, that purifies one, brings one to goodness. And then gradually, if he has the aim of bhakti, right, mad yoga ashataha, so then when he gets purified enough, then he'll be able to do this one, working for directly for the Lord. And then when he does that enough, okay, you're with me so far? Because now it's going to become more confusing. So if you're not settled now, then should ask some questions, I guess. I shouldn't even say this, but anyway. Yes. Yeah. And yeah, that's the Mad Yoga Mahasrita. The Prabhupada didn't write that, but in the commentary, he's saying that. Yeah. But the translation doesn't say he should take shelter of my bhakti yoga, because it doesn't make sense to say that really directly in the translation, but only in the commentary. It's like, that's like a subtle thing, because it has to do with the person's direction, you know. Yeah, not just self-realization. That was your question. Yeah. Murari and Chaitanya Charan have the same frequency and tuned into the same station. Okay. Okay, now next verse. So there's at least two ways of seeing the next verse, and I'll try to present them. But, you know, like this is, I would say, probably the most difficult verse in the Bhagavad Gita to understand. And when you hear the commentaries, you'll understand why. I'm going to do that now. To 12. Because the 12, it explains the other things a bit. Shreyo hi jnanam abhyasaj jnanat jnanat vishishyate jnanat karma phala tyagachantiranantanam. If you cannot take to this practice, then engage yourself in the cultivation of knowledge. Better than knowledge, however, is meditation. And better than meditation is renunciation of the fruits of action. For by such renunciation, one can attain peace of mind. So here, Krishna is actually glorifying Nishkam Karma Yoga. And it's logical because the common folk, they find it difficult to do the higher stages, and they can only do Nishkam Karma Yoga because it's very easy. Even though the Lord wants everyone to come to devotion, the practical point is that Nishkam Karma is very easy for people to do, to act in that level. Yeah, maybe you've read this book that Prabhupada wrote in Bengali called Renunciation Through Knowledge. Huh? Sword of Knowledge, they call it, okay. And that, in that book, he also glorifies Nishkam Karma Yoga again and again and again and again throughout the whole book. We can see that it's a very good platform for people to come onto. Because they're, you know, it's like Yad Karoshi, Yad Ashnasi, something like that. Because they're already doing, whatever you're doing, just offer it to Krishna. And then they don't have to really change their lives so much, they just have to change their consciousness and try to think of Krishna, think of themselves as devotees. Like that. Of course, that's like leaning towards. So this Yad Karoshi verse is like in between, as we said, Nishkam Karma and Bhakti. So there's, it kind of like pushes you right into Bhakti. You know. Because you're actually offering things for the Lord, but it's kind of at the end of your activity. So then you gradually, as you become purified, and you become attracted, and your faith increases, then you offer your life, your work, and all your activities, even before you begin. And then that's just a kind of mentality. So Nishkam Karma Yoga is a very good springboard to send someone into the process of bhakti. And so let us try to first we this is the good one. Okay. So I'll just make a separate box here to describe this. So in 8 we have Raga Bhakti, Raga Marg. 9 we have Vaidhi Sadhana. 10 you can call it, I don't know, Bhagavan Seva, I guess. And 11. Okay, so these are like directly bhakti. This one, the person, as we said, he wants to be a devotee, but he really can't for some reason or another. So you can say that this is Bhagavat Arpit Nishkam Karma Yoga. Now, this verse says, Shrehi Gyanam Abhyasach. If you cannot do this one, then practice knowledge. Okay? But better than knowledge, in between them, is meditation. Or dhyana. That's the word. Right? So these are mentioned. Now, according to the the yoga ladder, we would see this as, jnana, yoga, and, maybe a form of bhakti, some kind of close to bhakti. Or we can say, this is Nishkam Karma Yoga, right? So then it doesn't seem to, kind of fit, right? Because usually you have Karma Yoga down here, Jnana, and then Ashtanga Yoga, right? So, right? So, this kind of spins people's wheels a bit. That's why it's not so easy. So, now I say here, Prabhupada talks about, he fills in this space in his commentary. And if you look, he's talking about Varnashram Dharma in Karma Yoga. Listen to the commentary. As mentioned in the previous verses, there are two kinds of devotional service, the way of regular principles and the way of full of attachment and love to the Lord. For those who are not able to follow the principles of Krishna consciousness, it is better to cultivate knowledge. So it's dropping down to here. Because by knowledge, one can be able to understand his real position. Gradually, knowledge will develop to the point of meditation. By meditation, one can be able to understand the Supreme Lord by a gradual process. So it's still indirect. There are processes which make one understand that one himself is the Supreme. Is Prabhupada referring to 9:15? Ekatvena, Pritakvena, maybe. And that sort of meditation is preferred if one is unable to engage in devotional service. If one is not able to meditate in such a way, there are prescribed duties in the Vedic literature, right? If you can't do that, then now he's talking about Varnashram Dharma in karma. For Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras. And we shall find in the last chapter of the Gita, So he kind of fills up, this is actually talking about karma down here, Karma Yoga. This is also Karma Yoga, but it's Bhagavad Arpit Nishkam Karma Yoga, and also it's with the Mad Yoga Ashrita, that he wants to be a devotee. So because there's a slight tinge of bhakti, it's considered even higher than these three, and then you have the usual scenario, Karma Gyan Yoga and Bhakti. So that's how Prabhupada has explained this. Which makes sense, it's logical, and everything fits. So then he, again, the... Huh? I think so. Well, that's what he says, Brahman, Vaishya.
And,
so Since it's describing the last part of the Bhagavad Gita, yeah, it's like karma yoga. It could be sankam, nishkam. I mean, everything Krishna says in the Gita has the idea of pointing you towards bhakti, but, you know, usual varnashram, you know, activities doesn't. And not directly. I mean, there are verses say that if you're performing varnashram without becoming Krishna conscious, you go to hell. But let's just accept it on this point. Now, the last paragraph goes through the same scenario. In summary, to reach the Lord, the highest goal, there are two processes. One process is gradual, and the other is direct. So these are direct. Yeah? You're holding it the right way. Devotional service in Krishna consciousness is the direct method, and the other method involves renouncing the fruits of one's activities. Right? Then one can come to the stage of knowledge. Okay, I'm sorry. Now he's talking about this now. Sorry. Right? The other method involves renouncing the fruits of one's activities. Then one can come to the stage of knowledge, then the stage of meditation, then to the understanding the super soul, which comes from meditation, and then to the stage of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which would be here. So then you're talking, this is what he's talking about. Yeah. Well, at least the person, you know, he's kind of got the idea of doing this for the Lord. The direct process is not possible for everyone. Therefore, the indirect process is also good. It is, however, to be understood that the indirect process is not recommended for Arjuna because he's already at the stage of loving service to the Lord. It's for others who are not at the stage. For them, the gradual process of renunciation, knowledge, meditation, realization of the Supersoul and Brahman should be followed. But as far as the Gita is concerned, it is the direct method that is stressed. Everyone is advised to take the direct method and surrender to the Supreme Lord. Okay. So that's the kind of traditional, you know, that's Prabhupada's presentation. But we have another way to look at it, which involves these three things. Like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Bhaktivinoda Thakur say that Krishna's talking about these three things in the verse. Okay? And that when he says dhyana, he's talking about this one. Right? So now you've got a whole different thing going on here. Because now these are all bhakti on a high level. Right? So I can only read the commentary and then you can make up your own mind what you want to do. But it's interesting because they both fit. And but now, because then you'll see how you can actually accept both of them at the same time without a problem. Okay, we're in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur first. Now, please, you have to listen very carefully because it's complicated. Now, while explaining the gradation of abhyas, manana, and smarana in ascending order, the Lord speaks this verse. Jnana means to absorb your intelligence in me, because such manana of me is superior to abhyas. Right? So jnana. Manana is superior to abhyas. Right. In abhyas, meditation requires endeavor, like struggle, and is troublesome, because there are obstacles. But when one reaches the manana stage, meditation becomes easy. This is the superiority of jnana. It says that jnana is better than abhyas. That's what he's talking about. This is manana is better than dhyana. Because this is superiority of jnana. Superior to jnana, however, is dhyana. Why? Because dhyana leads to karma pala tyag. That is, it even dispels the desires for karma phal, such as the pleasures of swarga and the results of nishkam karma, which is moksha. Even if these become available of their own accord, in other words, the pleasure of swarga and moksha just come by the will of providence somehow, or they're presented to you, one neglects them. Bhaktas who have not achieved stability in dhyana and rati has not come into their hearts, they desire to give up moksha tyag. But those who have attained stability in dhyana do not even have the desire to give up moksha because they disregard it naturally. That one's a little tricky. Only bhakti of this type is called moksha laguta karani. And this is described in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Kleshagni Shubhada Moksha Laguta Krit Sadulaba Sandrananda Visheshatma Shri Krishna Kashanichas. Then he quotes from the 11th canto, Na Parameshyam Na Mahendridhisnyam Na Sarvabhumam Na Risadipatyam Na Yoga Siddhir Apunarbhavam Va Mayrarpitatme Chati Madvinanyat. So he says that this mayarpitat mechati means steadfast in my dhyana. In other words, that verse says that the devotee who comes to that level, then he doesn't want parameshyam, the level of Brahma, mahendra dhisnyam, or to attain the position of Indra, sarvabhomam, to be the lord of all the worlds, narasadipatyam, to be a lord of the lower planets, Yoga Siddhir, the perfections of yoga, and Apunar Bhavam Va, or even liberation. Why? Because Mai Arpitat Me Chati, he has achieved this Mad Vinanyat. Therefore, he doesn't want anything else because he's come to the stage of Dhyana and he's developed his mood of love, Rati. So that stage, Moksha Laguta Krit, means that bhava bhakti, right? This is, and sudulabha, these are two of the symptoms of bhava bhakti. So then this would be pitched actually higher than what I was thinking. I was thinking like asakti and like this, but. Okay. Now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur basically says the same thing, but he gives some different points. He's speaking as if Krishna, he says, O Arjuna, sadhana bhakti is only means to attain is the only means to attain nirupadika prema. Right? Nirupadika. There's, in other words, pure prema with no higher, that's the highest kind of prema. This bhakti yoga is of two kinds. Number one, the mind is fixed on the Lord. Number two, is engaging his external senses. Fixing the mind is of three types, smarana, manana, and abhyas. But for the less intelligent people, these are very difficult to do. The second type of bhakti, of the external senses, is in the form of shravanam, kirtanam, and is easily performed by everyone. Therefore, manana, intelligence in relation to me, is superior to jnana and is better than abhyas. Here, jnana does not refer to jnana yoga. During abhyas, one performs jnana with endeavor. But when one attains the result of abhyas, which is manana, jnana is easily done. Meditation is easily done. So meditation or dhyana is better than mere jnana because when dhyana becomes steady, one becomes free from desires to enjoy the pleasures of swarga and the joys of moksha. When both of these desires are dispelled, one attains peace in the form of detachment from all sense objects, but not detachment from my transcendental form and qualities. So you see, almost exactly the same idea. He's echoing Vishvanatha Chakravarti Thakur in his commentary. And that's their... Now, I have my computer, I can read to you Baladeva Vibhushan's commentary. Because I have a devotee friend of mine sent me... He didn't actually translate the whole chapter, but up till 12. And I think verse 14 or 15. Verse 15 or something like that. So therefore, you can see that there is these two ways of looking at this verse. In this verse, this is Baladeva Vibhushan. In this verse, 2.12, Krishna glorifies nishkam karma because, one, it's easy to do. Two, it's not bewildering. In other words, one won't make mistakes. And three, it gives birth to knowledge. Right? Apramatvat. It's not bewildering to me. Knowledge, then he quotes, and I think this is like Krishna speaking. Knowledge of the direct perception of one's soul is better than the... Because this is what he's been saying throughout, right? About perception of one's soul. A constant theme with him. Knowledge of the direct perception of one's soul is better than the unsuccessful practice of constant remembrance of me. Because knowledge is the gateway to the perception of the supersoul, and compared to the unsuccessful performance of that knowledge, meditation on one's own soul, being a practice to achieve that knowledge, is superior. I'm going to read this twice, so it's very complicated. It's better for one's own welfare. And compared to the unsuccessful performance of that meditation, nishkam karma yoga is better. In other words, nishkam karma yoga is more praiseworthy. That's the first paragraph. Now, from renunciation comes peace. Tyagat chantir anantaram, it is said. This means that from nishkam karma yoga immediately comes purification of the mind. And when the mind is pure, meditation is achieved. When meditation is achieved, there arises knowledge in the form of direct self-perception. And when this knowledge is achieved, one attains its result, knowledge of the supersoul. By that knowledge of the supersoul, one achieves supreme devotion. By that devotion comes the attachment of me in my Aishwarya form. Thus, this process is very difficult to undergo. This is the meaning of this verse. Now, the last paragraph. This instruction is not meant for Arjuna because of his exclusive love for Krishna. Sanishta devotees, who are intent upon nishkam karma and who meditate on Hari, directly experience their own soul. Thereafter, directly experiencing Hari by their aroused devotion, which has Krishna as its loving object, and focusing on his supreme majesty, they are liberated. That's a long sentence, I realize. This is the path of the sacred teaching of the Bhagavad Gita. However, it is not meant for those who are exclusively attached to Krishna, like Arjuna. You want to hear that again? Huh? No? It takes a few times. Actually, I went through this and even kind of edited it because I have the Sanskrit here also. In this verse, Krishna glorifies nishkam karma yoga because, one, it's easy, two, you don't make mistakes, and three, it gives birth to knowledge.
This is what
12.12, Baladeva Vidyabhushan.
No, 11th verse, nishkam karma yoga.
12.12. This verse, this glorifies nishkam karma yoga.
Tinge of
bhakti? I don't know, you decide from the comment. You listen to the commentary. I'm just writing, he didn't say, just telling Want me to? I can read the Sanskrit. Sukara tvat, apramada tvach, jana garba tvach, chana bisanghita phalam karma yogam stauti. Karma yoga stauti. So in this verse, Krishna glorifies nishkam karma yoga because it's easy, it's you won't make mistakes, and it gives knowledge. Knowledge of the direct perception of one's soul is better than the unsuccessful practice of constant remembrance of me, because knowledge is the gateway to the supersoul. And compared to the unsuccessful performance of that knowledge, meditation on one's own soul, being a practice to achieve that knowledge, is superior. So he's saying that these things are all in reference to if the higher stage is unsuccessful. Always. And compared to the unsuccessful performance of that knowledge, meditation on one soul is superior. Because you can get that knowledge by that meditation. And so it's better for your welfare. And compared to the unsuccessful performance of that meditation, nishkam karma yoga is better. In other words, nishkam karma yoga is more praiseworthy. And that's what it says here. Jnanat karma palatyagats. Better than that meditation, whereby you can get that knowledge, and that's better. Because he's saying that because it's more simple and it's on a lower level, it's better. Usually, if you say that this is better, then you think that this is right higher. But he flips the thing around, saying that this is better. Because it's lower, because it's pitched at a lower and easier platform. Because if you're trying to jump up here and you're unsuccessful, it means you're wasting your time. Better to do something lower and do it successfully. At least you can get that gist from it, right?
So can you repeat that last part? The knowledge of one's own soul is better
than knowledge. Okay, Lacha. Well, you got the first part already, right? I'm editing and I'm going to make it shorter. Direct perception of one's soul is better than the unsuccessful remembrance of me, because knowledge is the gateway to perception of the supersoul. Yeah. Okay, let's try it again. Knowledge of direct perception of the soul is better than the unsuccessful practice of constant remembrance of me, because knowledge is the gateway to the supersoul. Perceptions. And compared to the unsuccessful performance of that knowledge, meditation on one's own soul, being a practice to achieve that knowledge, is superior. It's better for one's own welfare. And compared to the unsuccessful performance of that meditation, nishkam karma yoga is better. In other words, nishkam karma yoga is more praiseworthy. From renunciation comes peace. This means that from nishkam karma yoga immediately comes purification of the mind. And when the mind is pure, meditation is achieved. When meditation is achieved, there arises knowledge in the form of direct self-perception. When this knowledge is achieved, one attains its result, knowledge of the supersoul. By that knowledge, one achieves supreme devotion. By that devotion comes the attainment of me in my Aishvarya form. Thus, this process is very difficult to undergo. This is the meaning of this verse. This instruction is not meant for Arjuna because of his exclusive love for Krishna. Sanishta devotees who are intent upon nishkam karma and who meditate on Hari directly experience their own soul. Thereafter, directly experiencing Hari by their devotion, in which Krishna in Aishvarya is the loving object, they are liberated. This is the path of the sacred teachings of the Gita. However, it is not meant for those who are exclusively attached to Krishna, like Arjuna. So, he describes it in even a different way than the Prabhupada and from Bhaktivinoda and Vishwanath Chakravarti. Because his ideas throughout the whole thing is that this perception of the self is what Krishna is speaking about, like from the beginning. So anyway, probably the easiest way to look at it is the way Prabhupada explained it. It's very simple. And then, you know, the higher kind of loftier presentation by Bhaktivinoda Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. But Baladeva Vibhushan and Prabhupada both are presenting some similar kind of thing, that because Prabhupada generally follows Baladeva Vibhushan in his commentary and his understanding. And it's clear that Prabhupada's also saying that Nishkam Karma Yoga is very good, and he was also promoting it in the previous verses. But he makes sure that everyone understands that directly bhakti, that's the best thing. The direct path is recommended in the Bhagavad Gita. I'm afraid to ask for questions about this. Because I've explained everything that I know about this already. But my realization is probably no much higher than yours on this topic. But one thing is for sure, that you can. It's clear that there's different angles of vision on the different texts of the Bhagavad Gita, even from our own Gaudiya line. And that's okay. There's no problem. There's different ways to see things. I mean, Baladeva Vibhushan is a disciple of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and he gives a whole different gloss on this verse from his Gurudev, right? So it means it's not offensive to be able to see things differently even than your spiritual master. I mean, within reason, as long as it's following the scriptures and you have some, you know, evidence to present what you're saying, you may see things in a different way. At least when it comes to such kind of details. So let's just finish this last section and then we can ask for questions at the end. I'm going to turn off my computer. So Arjuna is thinking in his mind now, and he's thinking that what is the nature of the devotees who have attained the stage of peace? Tyagat Shantir Anantaram. So Krishna, expecting this question, having read his mind, begins describing the nature or the lakshana of the devotees who have attained peace. So this is, you know, how to recognize someone who has attained bhakti. So we have there are external and internal symptoms. So here, the internal symptoms are explained. There's 35 qualities. And pointing out these qualities further substantiates the theme of chapter 12. What is that? That bhakti is the best means for spiritual advancement. So the root cause of these qualities is that the person's heart is surrendered to the Lord. Krishnaika Sharanam, which is the main quality of the 26 qualities of a devotee. Krishnaika Sharanam. His heart is surrendered to the Lord. So such devotees are dear to the Lord. Okay, so let us chant 13 and 14. Adveshta sarva bhutana maitra karuna eva cha nirmamo nirahankara samadhuka sukha shami santushta satatam yogi yathatma drida nischaya mayarpita mano buddhir yomad bhakta same priyaha. One who is not envious, but who is a kind friend to all living entities, who does not think himself a proprietor and is free from false ego, who is equal in both happiness and distress, who is tolerant, always satisfied, self-controlled, and engaged in devotional service with determination, his mind and intelligence fixed on me. Such a devotee of mine is very dear. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments that if someone asks how or with what discrimination one can show friendship and compassion towards an envious person, the answer is that these moods exist naturally within the devotees who don't discriminate. It means that they're not just doing it philosophically, but they actually naturally act in such a way. Someone might question, would he feel pain if someone beat him with shoes or slapped him? Answer is samadukha sukha. He stays even-minded. And someone might question, but how do they maintain their lives? The answer is santushta. Whatever eatables they get by the will of providence, they're satisfied. Then Arjuna asks, but before you said they're even-minded in sukha and dukkha, satisfied even if they don't get any food. Now, I don't know if he's referring to previous chapters, perhaps. So how can they feel satisfied when getting food for themselves? This seems contradictory. And then Krishna says, satatam yogi, being down with bhakti, they're always satisfied. And they want to maintain their bodies simply to attain perfection in bhakti. That's the only reason why they accept food. As it is said, one must acquire food to maintain one's life. Such maintenance is proper, because only by keeping the body healthy can one think of God. If they get nothing to eat, they're undisturbed. So you see, the person has bhakti, he's satisfied to get foodstuffs just so that he can keep the body alive so that he can perfect his bhakti. Because that's the only purpose that he sees to stay alive. And if he can't do bhajan properly, then he might as well die and take birth somewhere else and do bhajan. Like this. So that's, he's kind of like bouncing off one word and another, like advaishta, the person who's envious, right? Someone who is advaishta sarvabhuta, someone who is dveshti, who's envious, that devotee doesn't become his enemy's enemy. But he thinks that somehow by my parabdha karma, I have this coming to me. And the Lord has incited this person to be angry or envious at me. So better just to tolerate it and just see it as the Lord's arrangement. And Prabhupada mentions this in his commentary also. And Maitra, that he's friendly. He prays that the dveshti persons will not have an improper mentality. Like Jesus Christ prayed that, oh Lord, they do not know what they've done. So actually prays for the other person's benefit. And someone might ask, can such a person like this, can he actually survive in the world? Is it practical? Krishna santushta, yes, he's satisfied because he's my devotee. And satatam yogi, he can control his senses. He accepts whatever food comes. If nothing comes, he's okay. But when food comes, he's satisfied because he can keep his body together so he can perfect his bhakti. Okay, next verse. Yasmanno dvijate loko lokanno dvijate chaya harsha marsha bayodvigar muktaya sachame priya. He for whom no one is put into difficulty and who is not disturbed by anyone, who is equipoised in happiness and the stress, fear and anxiety, is very dear to me. So Krishna says that he develops the following qualities mentioned in the following five verses. My devotee. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur quotes this, yas yasti bhaktir bhagavati akinchana suverguna statra samasute sura. He says, such verses confirm that all good qualities which please God arise naturally from bhakti. Bhakti abhyas, the continuous practice of bhakti, bring these qualities. And here, that na udvijate, he's not disturbed. He doesn't disturb people, and he's not disturbed by people. And he's equal in harsha, marsha, bhayodvegya, in happiness and distress, fear and anxiety. Next verse. Anapeksha shuchir daksha udasino gatavyataha savarambha parityagi yomad bhakta same priya. My devotee, who is not dependent on the ordinary course of activities, who is pure, expert, without cares, free from all pains, and not striving for some result, is very dear to me. So here's some more characteristics. Anapeksha means unconcerned with mundane affairs or not desiring anything material. Not attached to material persons, relatives, and so forth. Neutral. And Baladeva Vibhushan says that anapeksha means when that object comes, when some object comes without desire, he doesn't have the interest to enjoy that either. Even when the sense, something pleasing comes just on its own, and he has an opportunity, he's also neutral to that. He doesn't feel excited about that. Daksha means he's expert in the philosophy of his line, in the literature and philosophy of his sampradaya. Udasina means he doesn't take sides in some arguments. And gatavyata means even if he's disrespectful, he doesn't feel disturbed. And Prabhupada more or less reiterates these points in his commentary. Remember there was one point, I think, that Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur said. He said, even, oh, that's in the next verse, Shubha Shubha, that even if, like teaching scripture, if it becomes somehow unfavorable to his bhakti, then he gives that up also. He can even renounce the auspicious. If it was like some impediment to his advancement in bhakti, he would also give that up. Yo na rishati na dveshti na shochati na kangshati shubha shubha parityagi bhakti manya same priya. One who neither rejoices nor grieves, who neither laments nor desires, and who renounces both auspicious and inauspicious things, such a devotee is very dear to me. So he is not rishiti, like elated, if he has a nice son or, you know, intelligent or wealthy disciple. He doesn't become like overjoyed. And nadveshti, he doesn't become disappointed and morose or heat. If his, you know, he has a, you know, foolish disciple, or a wayward son, or a bad disciple, some rascal, just thinks what to do. He's equal. And Shubha Shubha, he doesn't want piety so that he can go to heaven. And he's willing to renounce auspicious things, such as teaching scripture, if it somehow gets in the way of his bhakti, which generally it doesn't, but somehow it might. I don't know. Okay, then two more verses. It kind of summarizes or is the qualities. Samashatra chamitrecha tatamana pamanayo shitoshna sukadhukeshu samasanga vivarjitaha turya nindastutir mauni santushto yena kena chit aniketastidamatir bhaktiman me priyo naraha. One who is equal to friends and enemies, who is equipoised in honor and dishonor, heat and cold, happiness and distress, fame and infamy, who is always free from contaminating association, always silent, satisfied with anything, who doesn't care for any residence, who is fixed in knowledge, and who is engaged in devotional service, such a person is very dear to me. So according to one's advancement, one develops and manifests these to a greater or lesser degree. If someone's at sanishta, parinishta, or nirapeksha, he'll develop these and present and manifest them according to the devotee's advancement. So the qualities, again, are basically detachment from the material body and the world and the material movings of the mind, the functions of the mind. So these qualities are related to bhakti. Whereas the qualities in chapter 13 are more related to jnana, which we'll see soon. Sthiramati means he's fixed on the transcendental goal. And aniketa means that he's without attachment to possessions like house, etc. Right? Not attached to his living place. Niketa, right? Means a place to live. Like we see, Prabhupada exhibited some of these, like Aniketa. He went to Bhuvaneshwar as long as there was some electricity so that he can do his, you know, translating. But he was living in a very simple hut. It was just, you know, like some bricks and then there was like a straw roof. Very, very simple. In Mayapur also he had a grass hut. And his god brothers would sometimes come by and they would sit and have lunch together. But, you know, after some time, of course, they built the main building, which had Prabhupada's room in it. And there was marble and there was two rooms and there was a sitting room for him to have darshan. It was much bigger and it was obviously much nicer. So the devotees came and they offered it. They said, Prabhupada, your rooms are ready now, so you can move into the building there. We've arranged your rooms, they're very nice. And he said, no, it's okay, I'll stay here. Devotees, you know, but Prabhupada, we finished your rooms and you can come there now. He said, no, I like it here, I'll stay here. I said, but Prabhupada, it's so much nicer there. He said, for you it's nice. That is passionate place. You think it because you're in passion, you like it. But this is the mode of goodness. I like this better. The devotees didn't know what to do. They just walked away and they spoke amongst themselves. They said, what are we going to do? Prabhupada, we got to somehow get him into the room out of that hut. There's so many mosquitoes and it's, you know. Then they got an idea. Let's try this. Then they went back and said, Prabhupada, we built your room and we would like you to move in there, although we know you said that you like this better. He said, yes, I like this better because this is mode of goodness. This is the kind of place where a sadhu will stay. He said, but Prabhupada, you're the representative of the siblic succession. So in order to represent your previous spiritual masters, it's better if you are in such more beautiful rooms. I said, what? What is that? And then they explained, and also because people will, when they come they'll respect you more. They'll take your preaching more seriously if you're in such a room. Because it is said that, you know, under a tree, the sadhu is not taken so seriously. And besides, the room is more comfortable for your guests, so they'll be able to concentrate more on what you're speaking and you're preaching. And then Prabhupada said, all right. Okay. Then they convinced him to go on these points. Because he could understand that, you know, the common people, they will be more comfortable there, and they'll take him more seriously. And, you know, they'll respect him because he's the representative of the disciplic succession and his previous gurus. So only on those reasons he accepted the rooms. But otherwise, he was quite happy to live in the thatched hut. That was his, and it wasn't just a game he was playing, it was real, you know. So that's the nature of a sadhu, is aniketa. So Prabhupada writes in his commentary here, we may find some repetition in the descriptions of the qualifications of a devotee, but this is just to emphasize the fact that a devotee must acquire all these qualifications. Without good qualifications, one cannot be a pure devotee. Haro amaktasya kato mahadguna. So that's the famous verse there. So now the last verse of the chapter is given in number 20. This ends the 12th chapter, and this ends the section on Bhakti Yoga. Yetu dharmam ritam midam yatoktam paryupasate shadadhana matparama bhaktaste tivame priya. Those who follow this imperishable path of devotional service and who completely engage themselves with faith, making me the supreme goal, are very, very dear to me. There's the commentary of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. These characteristics that arise in one from devotion and from peacefulness are not material qualities. This is in accordance with the statement, Krishna is satisfied only by devotion, never by material qualities. The word to, but, in this verse, indicates the introduction of a new idea. Right? Yetu dharmam ritam idam. The devotees described up to this point have each perfectly cultivated one aspect of their personalities. So they've developed certain aspects of these good qualities. But here it says one aspect of their. Those mentioned in this verse 20, however, are desirous of perfecting all of these qualities. Therefore, even during the stage of sadhana, they are superior to those on other paths, even if those individuals have achieved the perfected stage of their other path. For this reason, the word ativa, extremely, or very, very, is used in this verse. So the devotees who want to develop all these qualities, they're better than the siddhas on the paths of yoga and jnana, even though they have achieved siddha in their own other path. Therefore, this word ativa, which means extremely, is used here. So the word too does kind of designate that there's something special about this verse and the devotees. Okay. Prabhupada writes, in this chapter, now he's summarizing the whole chapter here, which he usually does in the end. You can see the first and the last commentary of each chapter. You get a whole summary. In this chapter, from verse 2 through the end, from Mayavesha Manoye Mam through Yetu Dharmam Ritam Idam, the Supreme Lord has explained the process of transcendental service for approaching him. Such processes are very dear to the Lord, and he accepts a person engaged in them. The question of who is better and who is engaged one who is engaged in the path of impersonal Brahman or one who is engaged in the personal service of the Lord was raised by Arjuna. And the Lord replied to him so explicitly that there is no doubt that bhakti to the Lord is the best of all processes of self-realization. In other words, in this chapter, it is decided that through good association, one develops attachment for pure devotional service and thereby accepts a bona fide spiritual master, and from him begins to hear and chant and observe the regulative principles of devotional service with faith, attachment, and devotion, and thus becomes engaged in the transcendental service of the Lord. This path is recommended in this chapter. Therefore, there is no doubt that devotional service is the only absolute path for self-realization for the attainment of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The impersonal conception of the Supreme Absolute Truth, as described in this chapter, is recommended only up to the time one surrenders himself for self-realization. In other words, as long as one does not have the chance to associate with a pure devotee, the impersonal conception may be beneficial. In the impersonal conception of the Absolute Truth, one works without fruitive result, meditates, and cultivates knowledge to understand spirit and matter. This is necessary as long as one is not in the association of a pure devotee. Fortunately, if one develops directly a desire to engage in Krishna consciousness in pure devotional service, he does not need to undergo step-by-step improvements in spiritual realization. Devotional service, as described in the middle six chapters of Bhagavad Gita, is more congenial. One need not bother about materials to keep body and soul together, because by the grace of the Lord, everything is carried out automatically. So a very good summary, stressing bhakti over the other paths, giving the other path of jnana, you know, some credence, being, you know, objective about it, but at the same time saying that bhakti is far superior, and Krishna makes that very clear. And he stresses the association of the pure devotee, of the spiritual master or superior Vaishnava, so that one can get guidance on the right path, be free from obstacles and other desires for svarga or moksha, etc. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has ended this chapter saying that jnana has been described as neem, and bhakti as draksha, which means sweet grapes. So jnana is like neem leaves, and bhakti is like grapes. You call angur, huh? Angur. And draksha in Sanskrit. Sadakas who are greedy for their respective tastes accept a particular one according to their desires. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is like the rasik acharya, you know. So he's making something to do with ras. Then Baladeva Dibhushan says, among various sadhanas, only Shuddha Bhakti, which is supremely effective and easily done, quickly bestows attainment of Bhagavan. This is the essence of this chapter. So that's it. Questions by the Prashna Sagar Maharaj. Well, Bhagavad Gita is the preliminary study. Krishna uses words like priti. Yeah, he says the devotees are dear to me. But, you know, they worship me with love. Bhajatam priti purvakam. So that is, you know, and Tushanti Chai, Ramanti Chai indicates the different rasas. So these higher things are only kind of indirectly indicated, because Bhagavad Gita is a preliminary study, but it does point towards Vraja Bhakti and higher, Rasa Bhakti, Rasa Mayi Bhakti. There's also this thing about, you know, being detached in happiness and the stress and so forth. In regards to the senses and the sense objects, yeah, he's neutral. But he's not neutral in regard to Krishna and Krishna's devotees. So he expresses a wide range, full range of emotions, in regards to bhakti, devotional service, devotees, and the Lord. But in regards to his senses and sense objects, then he's very, you know, callous. Just like Prabhupada was driving around in South India once, and with some of his disciples probably the ambassador, it was the only car at that time, and they were driving on the road, and they saw a horrible sight. There was a man had just been flattened completely, run over by a truck, by a lorry, and he was just smeared his body was just smeared. It was just a pool of blood and some skin. You know, there was nothing left of the person at all. But the man's wife was there, and she had seen this. And she was screaming, you know, and you can imagine her face, you know, ah! And the devotees drove by. This woman was screaming, like, at the top of her lungs, with such a horrible expression. And then her husband was just smeared, just blood, just like a flattened, like a pancake, you know, on the road. And the devotees looked, and they, and they looked at Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was just like, he was completely, completely callous to the whole thing. But on another occasion, riding in the same area, they drove past a bus stand, and people were standing in a big queue to get on the bus. And Prabhupada looked, and he said, "Oh," and a tear came to his eye, and his eyes filled with tears, and he said, "They have to wait so long." And he was so filled with compassion, you know. You know, the complete opposite. You know what I mean? I mean, it's difficult to actually understand how a person on such a high level of consciousness can be so sensitive and cry. Like, when Prabhupada saw people, in America, they were playing golf. They were walking on a morning walk, and they walked past a golf course, and the guys are out there playing golf. And Prabhupada said, "What is that? What are they doing?" And the devotees said, "They're playing golf, Prabhupada." And he said, "What is that golf?" And they said, "Well, they hit a little ball into the hole with a stick." And Prabhupada said, "What is that? You know, they're grown men, they're wasting their lives hitting a ball in the hole with a stick." You know? And the sannyasis, they all started laughing, you know. But Prabhupada looked, and his face just turned so much like he was ready to cry, and he was like trembling. And then the devotees that were laughing, they kind of looked at him, and then everyone became quiet, you know. You know? Because he was feeling sorry for them, that they're so bewildered that they're wasting their lives, you know, hitting a ball with a stick into a hole in the ground, you know, spending the whole morning doing this. You know, they felt so sorry for them. Although it sounds ridiculous, right? So, compassion is there to the utmost degree, and at the same time, this callousness, total callousness, in regards to material relationships and, you know, birth and death, things like this. Prabhupada was completely transcendental. And you can't really kind of draw with black and white. You have to understand it in a more subtle way. Here's the emotions of the pure devotee. Because if you just look with your own eyes, all the pictures of Prabhupada, you get 100 pictures, and you'll have each one will be a very distinctive emotion being expressed on his face. Joy, sternness, anger, or laughing, or compassion, or just playing with a baby, or, you know, so many feelings and expressions. So he was fully expressive, and exhibited a full range of emotion. But at the same time, to the senses and the sense objects, it has nothing to do with it. Now, Are there any other questions? Have I completely bewildered you and confused your minds that you don't even dare to ask? Yeah, adding Krishna means that mad karma karin mad paramo. Right? That you either work for Krishna or you desire to come to Krishna. Like, you have the goal that Krishna is your goal. You assign that. You accept Krishna is the Supreme Lord. He's the goal of my life. And then however you slot in on this, this is, you can say, the bhakti yoga ladder, I guess, then it's auspicious because you're going in the right direction. So Krishna doesn't care so much at what level you are, but he cares more what direction you're going in. If you're coming to him, then he's pleased, and gradually you'll come closer to him. If someone's coming closer to him, he's pleased. But if they're going away, they may be very high, but if they're going in the wrong direction, then that's not good. Because then it's just a matter of time that you'll go through all of the stages. So we study the stages only because we should understand the science of bhakti. It's not, you know, to make you feel guilty that you're on the lower stage, or for you to, you know, feel that you have to, you know, imitate someone on the higher stage just so that you'll be socially accepted in ISKCON. And I think that gradually as devotees become more mature, then that kind of posturing won't be necessary or won't be so common. Because people will just accept that he's on our family, he's accepting Krishna as the goal of his life, he's accepting Prabhupada as the world acharya and studying his books, and surely, you know, he'll be purified, he'll come to the higher stages. Just like I said the other day, that this devotee, Vasudev, he was selling meat in his shop. And he asked Prabhupada, Prabhupada said, it's okay. You know, he was selling all these horrible things. Prabhupada said, that's okay, just chant Hare Krishna and just do your work and try to give some, you know, like this. It gave him complete freedom. And then gradually, Prabhupada knew that the process would work, and Vasudev, just maybe 6 months or so after that, he gave up all of these things on his own. Prabhupada didn't even have to ask him. So that's how we should be. In dealing with people, we just encourage them in the positive direction. And then all of the bad things will naturally fall away to the side. If we have faith in the process, then that's what will happen. If we don't have faith in the process, then we'll try to strangle the people. You have to do this, you have to do that, you have to give up this, why are you doing that? Then, you know, it'll be very hard for those people to advance. And then they'll act very artificially. Yes, 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 yes. I'm pure. Yes, I'm coming to this. You know, I don't do this. I don't do that. And, you know, hiding, you know, put the cigarettes in their pocket. You know, you know. It'll be very artificial. But if they just feel that it's positive and being encouraged, then gradually all those things will go away. Like when Prabhupada came to Shyamasundar in California. He asked him to, Shyamasundar Das, his disciple, he carved the Jagannath deity. And when he was finished, then they invited Prabhupada to the apartment. And Prabhupada came in, and he saw the deities were ready, were painted, looked very nice. But on top of Subhadra's head, there was a pack of Marlboro cigarettes sitting. You know? So, you know, Prabhupada saw that, but he didn't say anything. He just walked past. He said, oh, you did a very nice job. Thank you very much. They look very beautiful. You're very talented. I hope that, you know, you'll do more such service. And Shyamasundar felt so encouraged. And then some moments later, when the time was appropriate, then Prabhupada asked him, why are you letting such small thing come between you and God? You know, referring to the cigarettes, indirectly even. And then Shyamasundar, yes, yes, you're right, I shouldn't do that. And then Prabhupada said, I know. He said, you should try to give these up. Yes, have you tried to give these up? He said, yes, I've tried, but it's just so difficult, I couldn't do it. And Prabhupada said, how many cigarettes do you smoke? He said, one package a day. He said, how many is that? He said, 20. He goes, I got an idea. He said, why don't you just one day, every day you smoke one less cigarette, and then by the end of the month it'll be finished. And then Shamsun said, okay, I'll try that. So he did that, and that's how he stopped smoking. So Prabhupada was like, you know, very expert in dealing with devotees' attachments and so on. So we should be like that. Okay? Yes. No, but that's a different principle. That has nothing to do with the level. As we said, these qualities manifest according to the advancement of the devotee, proportionately. So the Madhyam Bhaktis also have them, but not quite as much as the Uttam Bhaktis. But both Madhyam, Kanishtha and Uttam, if they see devotee or the Lord being attacked, then they should get angry. That's their natural emotion, to protect the Lord and his devotees, or if they're being blasphemed or physically attacked. You know. So that's a different thing. That has nothing to do with being detached from the material world and from the body. But the detachment is manifested according to the advancement. But it does manifest, even in Kanishtha Adhikaris, they're more tolerant and detached than non-devotees. Right. Well, there's a lot of Leela, right? Arjuna was fighting Hanuman. He was fighting. To fight, one has to be angry. Right? Bhima. Wow, Bhima. Bhima beat up Jayadratha, left 5 hairs on his head. What, I guess one representing each of the Pandavas. You know, yeah, so much examples of that. I mean, I wrote in my book, there are many examples of this. Dhruva, Prithu. Oh yeah, Prithu also. The Kumaras. And Jagan Madai. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was angry, very angry. He was going to kill them. Yeah, so many examples there. So it seems that we've run out of time.